forum for frank talk about what people do for a living. Works do.
Hello, and welcome to Works Do. It's June 10th, 2012, and this is episode number 39. I'm Kate Gase Walton. I'm the editor of Works Do, an online collection of essays and interviews in which people ponder their work lives. In this episode, I talk to architect Hayes Slade. Here's the interview. I'm talking this morning to Hayes Slade of Slade Architecture. And Hayes, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me.
It's a pleasure.
So let's start with how you got to where you are today. What was your career path?
It's fairly circuitous. I started out being interested in just math and science in high school and was sort of guided into an engineering program. But it was a very clear path to go, and it made a lot of people happy, but it wasn't necessarily as broad as I wanted, and I was always interested in sort of a creative aspect to it, too. And so I did study structural engineering for undergraduate and graduate degrees, and then I worked at an engineering design firm designing buildings, specifically building structures, and I enjoyed that to a certain degree. But I found it a little bit limiting because I was always interested in kind of the more design side of it. As a structural engineer, you're working with architects and obviously supporting the design, but you're coming on to it a little bit after the fact. So I did that for 6 years or so. I worked in London, I worked in New York, and it was interesting, but I did find it a bit limiting. And I couldn't isolate exactly what was limiting about it, so I thought that perhaps if I was involved more on the business side, that would be more satisfying. So I went to business school at Wharton and was sort of fascinated by strategy consulting, which is, you know, a creative pursuit and it's a design, but it's a design of a sort of conceptual model, typically. Or I mean, it can be many things, but that's sort of what I was working on. I worked at BCG, but I found that work, while it was creative and interesting, to be sort of too removed from the actual physical nuts and bolts of things. So I sort of pretty quickly, after 2 years in that field, transitioned over to internet consulting and website, worked at a website design and advertising firm, which was sort of a nice marriage between design and business strategy. And then I'm still fascinated by my roots of building design, but looking more at the design side specifically. And then I kind of, like things normally do happen, it was a mix of personal and professional. 9/11 happened, and we were both, my husband and I, sort of always in the back of our minds had a long-term plan about working together in a very design-oriented pursuit. And when 9/11 happened, we just kind of felt like, wow, I mean, you never really know. If you have a long-term goal, you probably should just do it unless there's some real reason that you're not. And pretty much 12 months to the day from 9/11, we founded our own firm. So in parallel with my kind of circuitous path going from building structure to business strategy back to design, and then an architecture firm with my husband. He had studied literature and then gone straight to work in architecture. So we have a complementary skill set, and we both work together now. Our firm's 10 years old. We founded it in a year after September 11th.
So I wanted to ask about the early years of that, because the one thing that I always hear about architecture is what a hard industry it is to be in, that there are, you know, a handful of architects who do very well and that it's pretty tough for everyone else. First of all, is that true? And second of all, what was it like then to start a new firm?
It's definitely true. And that's part of the reason that I didn't, when I was making my choices of study, I gravitated or was sort of guided toward engineering because it's a more straightforward path, perhaps. Those engineering firms tend to be bigger. The work is a little less subjective. So all of those things, you know, I mean, if you have a quantifiable skill set, it's probably easier to get a job. And so there's a safety net in that. And that's the other reason that I thought business school might be an interesting pursuit, because obviously the financial reward is much higher in that kind of field. So while I got my master's degree and my MBA and worked at BCG, my husband had founded a firm with another partner. And so they kind of had like the first 2 years, and my consulting paycheck was definitely helping that firm kind of get started financially there. I mean, the work was very, very good, of course, but keeping the office, we had the office in our house, and I basically was, you know, paying for the apartment and stuff. So that it was a nice complimentary kind of setup. It definitely is hard to start a firm. It's actually hard to keep a firm going. It's not the kind of thing that I would recommend doing if you want to have a cushy life and definitely have every weekend off, because it certainly doesn't lend itself to that. But at the same time, it can be satisfying in a way that other things cannot. So if you're comfortable with this kind of weird life where it's sort of all work or all and all play at the same time, I mean, it's good in that respect. And I mean, you can obviously earn a living. I mean, people do it all the time. You have to be smart and you have to be disciplined. I think the thing that makes it so difficult is that it's a very multifaceted skill set, and you need to be constantly juggling a discipline with respect to your business practices and a passion with respect to your design, and you can't really let one override the other, because if you were all about, you know, discipline and, you know, punching the time clock, your design would probably suffer and we would come out with an inferior product. And on the other hand, if you were just to totally cave in and not worry about commercial interests, you would very quickly not have a firm.
So a walk through your website is a beautiful, beautiful thing. You've worked on some remarkable projects. What is the process to win a high profile project, like I'm sure the Barbie store in Shanghai was?
That was Mattel had hired an advertising firm. Ogilvy & Mather was the firm they work with was doing branding work for them. Ogilvy & Mather decided that a flagship store would be a great move, and so they set out on an architect qualifications kind of screen. So they started out with about 150 firms. They were basically, we had no idea they were doing this. They're just looking online through websites, and then, you know, at the end of the process, we saw their matrix. They had all these different attributes they were looking for, and they ranked firms. When they got down to about 50 firms, I believe, they sent out a non-disclosure agreement and asked for portfolios and credentials, but we still didn't know what the project was, so we were just kind of submitting a broad representative portfolio. And then as the group got smaller, then they had people in for interviews. When we were down to the final three, it was interviews with sort of specific, you know, initial ideas for the store, like what might the store be like. And it was, you know, it's always dangerous to do that because you're not yet engaged by the client and you don't really, you're not inside their mind yet. But they wanted to get a glimpse of what we thought would make sense for the brand, particularly in Shanghai. And so it was a very broad search in that case. And the final three, one was from London, one was from Japan, and then there was us. So, it was an exciting process. That's a pretty standard process. We have a few, I mean, typically some of these firms, companies that don't do design regularly will engage an outside firm, either an advertising agency or a specific RFP company, to screen firms, and then it gets, you know, more and more specific.
When you think back on the various projects that you have done together, you and your husband, at Slade Architecture, is there any one project that for you was the one that sort of validated the choices that you had made, that, you know, this was the kind of work you had aspired to do when starting your own firm?
I don't think it's, I can really say that one particular project, mm-hmm. but I think the ability to win a diversity of projects, like I really enjoy the fact that we have some very small things. We have a little doghouse, which we designed and produced, all the way up to big things like we're doing a homeless shelter in Brooklyn, and the fact that we can work on a variety of things like that, I think is very rewarding, because you have an opportunity to do high-profile things and very public things at the same time. That's something that I feel very proud of.
You know, interestingly, the interview that I did, sort of one before the last, was with a husband and wife team who work together, and they are long-haul truckers. They drive around the country together. And what was interesting, speaking to the woman, was she said before she met her husband, she was somebody who really always kind of liked her space. And when she first met him and discovered that he was a trucker, that was a plus because he was going to be gone a lot of the time and she could pursue her own interests. And now, irony of ironies, you know, they spend every minute of every day together.
Right.
What's that like for you two? What is, you know, how do you feel about working with a partner who's also a spouse?
I think that there's some real benefits that you could not have in any other setting. Like, you know that, you know, if you're negotiating something, for example, or trying to get closure on a particular business end of something, you definitely have the same goals because you're both at the same point in your life, pretty much. You know, you know that your personal affairs and your business affairs are the same, so you never have this situation where, like, one person, you know, is prioritizing, like, financial gain over some. You're always seeing things, but you're pretty much aligned, so that's not a problem. You have to learn to navigate, you know, disagreement in a way that's constructive, or if it's not constructive, you just kind of need to, like, disengage for a little bit because, you know, it's very important to keep it all together. But it's really not, the skills are really not that much different from what it takes to maintain a long-term relationship, you know, like.
I would think that one thing that happens, though, is do you feel like you work all the time because it's always there to talk about, or do you put down boundaries on that?
We don't really put boundaries, but I think I'd have the same thing no matter what I did, because when we worked separately, it was just that we would both talk about what was happening in our own respective offices, so at least now we're talking about the same thing.
That wraps up the interview for today. Thanks again very much to my guest, Hayes Slade. Thanks also to everyone who's contributed an essay to WorkStew. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening today. The next episode will be released in 2 weeks, and I hope you'll check it out. In the meantime, please let me know what you thought of the interview by sending an email to kate@workstew.com, by posting a comment on the WorkStew website, or by writing a review for iTunes. Thanks again, and bye for now. Thank you.